Hello, welcome to Holden Village. Today is July 24th, 2000. In the fireside room this morning is Scott Hasserud. Today's session number is 2001, and it's titled, Heirs According to Promise, God is with us, surrender. Let's listen in.
Instead of being good Lutherans, why don't we fill up this first row around the stone here? Because we're going to have a conversation. And this way I can see the whites of your eyes.
Someone's sitting here.
No, that's fine. You can enter in from there. Well, it's good to be with you. This week we're going to do a series of teachings of Jesus, and I use an approach that's a discussion method in hopes that we can enter into the teaching, or more aptly, have the teaching enter into us. It's a kind of reverse process where I get to be the student and you get to be the teacher. So we kind of put a text out here in the middle of the floor, or the middle of the stone, and then we'll try to walk around it. The way we do that is that I'll try to find questions that I think unlock within us some of the wisdom that Jesus wants us to learn about ourselves by doing this. So I encourage you all to speak up. I live in the Southwest, and so I've gotten interested in a lot of Native American stuff and spirituality. There's a saying on the Acoma Indians that to walk in balance, you have to learn to eat out of the other side of the basket, because the familiar side is toxic. If you're kind of quiet and shy like many Scandinavians and Germans are, speak up and eat out of the other side of the basket. There's something about saying something that helps you know it differently than if you just keep it within yourself. There are no right or wrong answers. Whatever response you have to the question, we'd love to hear from you. What that is, that will enrich others in the group. You'll say something that somebody was feeling but didn't have the words for it. When you'll say it, it's like a light bulb will go off in them, and that'll be helpful to them. If somebody says something that you don't does resonate with you or you disagree with, just bite your tongue and leave it in the the center of the room. You don't have to take it with you. But as I said, when people do say things that are meaningful to you, then you feel free to take those with you into the day and into your own thought and reflection. There was a New Testament scholar at the University of Chicago in the 20s by the name of Sharman, and he used to like to say, if we're willing to enter into the teachings of Jesus as an experience, we enter into the depths of ourselves. If we're willing to enter into the teachings of Jesus as an experience, we also enter into the depths of ourselves. So what we're after here is to enter into some depths of ourselves. Now we'll just get a little bit of a glimpse here in an hour. The basic seminar that we do on this is 17 days all day long, so to do much in an hour. But we get a good little glimpse here in an hour, so we want to sort of jump in and see where we go. We don't attempt to arrive at consensus about anything. As I said, the process is that we take away from it what is meaningful and truthful for us that seems helpful. So,
Scott, can I ask? I'm just curious. The 17-day all day. What is this
a curriculum you've developed, or is
it? No, it was actually a curriculum that this shaman developed back in the 20s, and been passed on through various groups. A number of us have worked at this process for a lot of years, and actually the seminar that I do, well, I've done everything from weekends to, but the one we try to do now is 9 days long. We go through the life and teachings of Jesus using this process. That also gives us time for, obviously, art and music and ritual and meditation and a lot of other things. Well, I thought we'd begin with the whole concept of surrender today. And I've chosen this text from Matthew 16 that you all know. Let me read it to you. Then Jesus told his, it's Matthew 16:24, by the way. You also find the same text in Mark 8:34 and in Luke 9:23. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. For whoever would save their life will lose it, and whoever loses their life for my sake will find it. For what will it profit a person if they gain the whole world and forfeit their life? Or what will a person give in return for their life? Well, this morning I think we'll probably only get through the first part. If anyone would come after me, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Okay, let's begin today with this word deny. What associations do you have with the word deny? What you know, words are not things, they point to things. They're symbols of things. What other words might you use or phrases that would mean a similar thing to deny? What
give
is
up.
This? What?
Give up.
Give up, all
doing
right.
Doing without.
What?
Doing without.
Doing without, all right.
Object.
Object?
Reject.
Oh, reject, okay.
Ignore.
Ignore.
I think punish sometimes.
Punish, all right. What else might it mean? Or what association do you have with this word deny? What comes to you?
Hold back.
Hold back.
Do without.
Do without. What'd you say?
Don't have.
Don't have, okay.
Deprive.
Deprive.
Give away.
Give away.
Deceit.
Deceit.
Deny.
Change course.
Change course, mm-hmm. Okay.
Alright. Disconnect.
Disconnect.
Hold back.
Hold back.
The word that came to my mind immediately was denial.
Alright.
Thinking about that. And I tend to think of denial as lying to oneself.
Right.
Which is different from denying.
Right. Yeah. Right. Okay. All right. All right.
Think about Peter in the garden denying Christ.
All right. Okay. Let's skip over to this word cross. We're going to try to build an image here. What does the word cross conjure up in your mind? What does it mean? What is a cross?
A burden.
A burden.
Trials.
Trials.
Execution device.
Execution device. All right.
Very Roman.
Very Roman. Okay. All right.
All right. Intersection of ways.
Okay, it's an intersection of ways. All right. Has a vertical dimension and a horizontal dimension.
The word cross, out of context,
yeah.
Also means angry. Mm-hmm.
All right. Okay.
That's my last name.
With a C or a K? Right. That's a cross to bear. All right.
Change your ways, cross over, people say.
Oh, cross over, okay.
No, just dawned on me that I've read this passage many times, but
right.
Christ talks about picking up their cross and follow me before he was on the cross.
Right. Okay.
So it just dawned on me that that was, has there been later editing to add that in, or was that actually what a scholar said? Yeah. That's actually what he said at the time?
The black marble?
I think there's very few exact quotes of Jesus.
Yeah, we have to realize that this is written from the perspective of faith community, although he has many sayings that are similar to this, like lose your life to find it, take up your cross, and so forth. The context may well have been Christians were facing martyrdom. But I think this has a profound inner meaning. I haven't really studied this passage from the standpoint of whether, you know, that question, but that's a good one. I'll have to look that up. I brought my Jesus Seminar books along, so I'll look it up and see what they say. Okay. Cross. It has a kind of human relation and, you know, God-human relation. It's interesting that my imagination is that, you know, the cross needs to be, have one end stuck in the ground, you know. In our churches, the crosses are always hanging up in the air. So I've always wanted to take them and plant them in the ground. So.
It's interesting, too, thinking about crosses at churches. The one on the altar at my church is made of brass and has this sort of sun with rays coming out
right.
of it behind
right.
the cross.
Right.
And, beautiful fleur-de-lis type right. thing on the ends.
Right.
Very Cadillac or Mercedes-Benz of crosses. Not a Yugo.
Yeah, it's a kind of a glory cross as opposed to, say, you go to a Roman Catholic church and the cross always has the crucifix on it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. What? I once was in a military chapel and they had this wonderful cross because on one side was the crucifix, on the other side it was empty. And when they'd have a Catholic service, they'd spin it around one way. When they had a Protestant service, they'd spin it around the other. And I thought, you know, we really need both sides, you know, symbolically to make it work. And it'd be nice if it just kind of rotated slowly.
Along with that Jesus.
Yeah, right. Okay. Now, whose cross does Jesus advocate that we pick up here?
Your own, ours.
Your own. Not his, right? There's been some confusion about that in Christianity at times. And does he say, I'll carry your cross for you? Huh? No. He says, you got to pick it up. Now, there's been some real confusion about that. I would suggest, you can think about that. But he says, take up your cross, right? And follow me. What is this, what is this phrase, take up? That's interesting. What do you associate with take up? Yeah.
A choice.
Okay, a choice, right. All right, yeah.
Well, I'm just sitting here looking at all of the crosses that are associated with this building. I mean, just structurally, the strength.
Okay.
And the foundation. And without foundation, the crosses have no strength.
Right.
But at the same time, if you consider taking up the cross,
right.
you're losing the foundation that you have to build a new foundation of some different kind. You follow me, well, it's a completely different foundation, and you
okay.
don't want to have any of that past foundation disturbing your process.
Okay. All right.
So who's my brother and my sister and my mother?
I mean, if your cross is going to move you forward or on another journey.
Okay. What does it mean to take up?
Cause.
What?
A cause.
A cause, all right.
Be engaged
right.
in whatever your burden or your cross or your passion or whatever and
okay.
give
right.
up the world.
All right.
Bearing.
What?
Taking up your cross would, to me, might be bearing.
Bearing, okay.
It's accepting, but it's almost embracing.
Embracing, all right. Not, I'm embracing, my imagination is you really put your arms around it, right? You don't just give somebody a peck on the cheek. You got to get a hold of them, right?
Or that assuming responsibility.
Okay, assuming responsibility.
All right. The image that comes to mind is of lifting up a heavy wooden object, throwing it over your shoulder, and dragging it behind you.
Okay.
For me, that's...
All right. Okay.
So it could be negative.
Yeah. Well, heavy.
Yes.
Burdensome.
Right.
Right. You know, I can only hear this through post-crucifixion and resurrection ears.
Okay. All right. Mm-hmm. Let's try to put some meat on this bone, or some flesh on this, right, on these bones. Now, we don't know each other, so I don't want to ask you to divulge, you know, secrets in your life that are best kept only to yourself. But if we could personalize this a little bit, it would help us. What would an example of a cross be? That needs to be taken up. If we were to internalize that some, what might a cross be?
Being a caregiver.
Okay.
Yeah. Sickness. Pain.
Sickness.
Pain.
Pain.
Death.
What?
Death.
Death. You mean like loss around you? Mm-hmm. Right?
Forgiveness.
Forgiveness, something that needs to be forgiven, is that what you're thinking? All right.
Something you're preoccupied with.
Something you're preoccupied with, so that it kind of clouds a lot of other things in your life. Mm-hmm. What else might a cross be?
I look at a cross as being something that you've taken on knowing the consequences.
All right.
Result.
Right. That could be something inward, it could be an outer cause.
I think maybe we're thinking along the same lines,
uh-huh.
and that is something that you choose, having been made aware of a need, a suffering,
okay.
A deprivation,
right.
and you take on
right.
that no matter what the cost.
Okay.
Something that creates a balance in your life.
Something that creates a balance.
Imbalance.
Right. You want to take that on so that you can create a balance. Right. All right.
Some sort of burden you have to deal with.
Okay. Some of those choose us, don't they? And don't go away, necessarily. Now, what would it mean to take up one of these things? Jesus says, take it up.
Don't fight it, engage in it.
Okay. All right. What would it mean to take it up?
Take it up.
All right.
Embrace it.
Deal with it.
Okay.
Internalize it.
All right.
Open to possibilities.
Okay. All right. What does that feel like to take it up as opposed to what? Just let it sit there? Or
ignoring it?
Ignoring it? denying it.
Complaining about it.
Bitching about it.
Could mean really getting into the emotions connected to it.
Getting into the emotion connected with it. Right. All right.
It seems that when we have pain, some type of pain in our life, that we, a natural instinct is to deny it so that we cannot deny ourselves. And so we live in the somehow trying to make ourselves feel good in often superficial ways, as opposed to embracing it, embracing the pain, living through the pain, allowing that pain to change us, which denies ourselves, but I think makes, changes us for the better.
Jesus says to walk forward, so if you walk with it, you walk through it, you walk around it, you walk under it, you walk over it, you live it.
Right.
And he's right, when you do that, you become a different person. And I think you're getting closer to what our journey is trying to have us do.
Okay.
We're all here on a journey.
Right.
And it should be a spiritual journey, not a... Advertising tells us what we should do, and it's
right.
Not what we should be working on.
Okay.
And it's hard to do in a noisy society.
Right.
I think that's one reason we have come to Holden,
right.
To help remember our center.
Yep.
I think that cross that you bear doesn't necessarily need to have a lot of negative context to
right.
it. You're walking with Jesus, meaning you're taking whatever experiences you have, be them good, bad, but you're using those to walk in his path. And that burden, walking Jesus' way, is going to become heavier. Because the more you walk in his path, the more you want to help other people to see or to try to show that path that you see, not that they would take the same path, but that maybe it opened a door for them. And thus your burden becomes heavier and heavier because you want more and more people to see that path.
Jesus always says he's yoked to you, and my burden is light.
Okay. Going back to your image of the cross, these crosses and the structure having strength because they're in a foundation, what if the cross isn't lying on the ground, but is in fact planted in the ground, ready to kill you? And what Jesus is saying is take it up, pull it out of the ground,
okay,
and follow me.
All right. That's
it. Take it away from the executioners.
Okay. All right.
And follow me.
Interesting.
Interesting image. All right. Take up your cross. What? Any other reflections on that?
What does your imagination say? We use our imagination is very close to the soul, and we need to use our imagination.
What happens to the cross when you take it up? Is there anything different happens to the cross?
Well, if you're using cross like trials or problems,
all right,
you inject love because this is the what Christ is putting forward is the love, God, and your neighbor. And I think when you use the word cross, it's more of an analogy of trials and troubles instead of running away from them, embracing them. As Christ would, in Christ's way of life.
Some of us, our cross is the alarming possibility that we're able, though, too. That's a statement from Kierkegaard. The alarming possibility of being able. I find as a spiritual director and therapist that it's true, a lot of us struggle with egocentricities and being inflated and at times, but I think a larger issue for many of us is the alarming possibility that we're more able than we give ourselves credit for. That's more of a plague. And I, to be able to, you know, pick that, take that up and go for it can be a huge challenge, right? Yes, I'm sorry.
I think if, when you imagine the cross in the ground,
yeah,
you could turn around and walk away from it.
Right.
If you take it up, it's with you.
Okay.
You know, you can't right. walk away from
right.
it.
Right. And Jesus did say, take it up, right?
Take
he didn't
it
say,
up.
Leave it there, deny it, pretend it doesn't exist. He didn't use any of those images. He said, take it up, right?
If I think of a cross as something that they're threatening to kill me,
all right.
I don't think of it as killing me physically. I think
right.
of it as maybe killing
right.
me inside.
Right.
And then if I think of it as taking it up and embracing it and owning it, it's almost like using it as a tool maybe to help me in following Jesus.
Okay. All right.
Almost rather than a weapon as an enabler to to help me in my journey.
I think it's almost like an alchemical process that if we embrace the darkness, if we fully embrace it, maybe this is another version of what many of you have said, but if you embrace it, then you will be transformed. That's where the alchemy comes
okay.
in. And then you will be better able,
right.
you will be more Christ-like, you will be able to follow.
Right.
For what it's worth, in Matthew's gospel, Jesus did not take up his cross. In Matthew's gospel, Matthew 27:32, I'll back up to 31. After mocking him, the soldiers, stripped him of the robe, put his own clothes on him, and led him away to crucify him. As they came out, they came upon a man from Cyrene named Simon, and they compelled this man to carry the cross.
Right. Okay. Yeah.
In response, I think then that this is an analogy that Christ's cross was not carrying that physical cross at all. That wooden thing, his cross was much bigger than that. Much more, it wasn't the concrete cross, even though that is the method in which they chose. They chose to crucify him, he chose his cross was to give up his life.
I think actually most scholars agree that Christ carried was just the crossbar in more recent times, and that the analogy is I think more whatever you're going to use for the cross is whatever. Embracing life with love.
It seems to me when he was in the garden though, and he was struggling with whether, you know, what he should do, that feels like a cross to me. I mean, he didn't physically have a bar on his shoulder, but it seems to me Jesus always had in his pocket the question, what does it mean to do the will of God? That was the central question for him. And that challenged him pretty deeply.
I didn't hear anything.
Oh, I said, it seems to me that Jesus always had in his pocket the question, what does it mean to do the will of God? And he struggled with that very deeply. Anyway, to stay with this particular text,
What text is it? I'm sorry, Scott, I can't
read. Oh, okay. It's Matthew 16:24. Then Jesus told his disciples, if anyone would come after me, let them deny themselves, take up their cross, and follow me. Let's move to the word follow. What does the word follow conjure up in your mind?
I will follow you.
Okay. All right.
What it conjures up in my mind.
Sure. What else?
When I was learning how to snow ski, I would get right behind my teacher and follow exactly in his.
All right.
And that way I became a better skier.
Okay.
But I literally followed.
Right.
I mean, every step,
right.
every turn.
Right.
Around those mountains, it was much better that way.
Okay. What does follow mean? Yeah.
I think follow is when you follow somebody, you recognize this person as the leader.
All right.
You follow them.
All right.
You trust them.
All right.
Imitate.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Also, once you make the choice to follow, you don't have to make any choices.
All right. What else might the word mean, follow?
Chronologically, it can mean to come after.
Come after. All right. All right. Other associations with follow?
There's dependence there. There's a dependence there.
All right. Okay. Could be, there's a sense of being a part of a community. Mm-hmm. Someone said in the last hour, it means that there's a discipline that I do. There's a process that I'm a part of. I do it in my own way. I bring my own issues to it. What does it mean to you then to follow Jesus? What might that mean?
Follow, comply with his instructions.
All right.
Live your life the way he gave us an example of how you live your life.
All right. Okay.
For me, it's a lot more complicated.
All right.
I guess maybe my journey's more complicated.
I've never seen it as simple, so there's at least two of us here.
It's kind of follow what I can't even use the word believe, but what I think that Jesus is asking me to do, kind of on a here and now kind of basis, rather than what I see. I somehow, you know, in reading the Bible, I get some clues, but it still has to be a little more personal for me, and the questions have to keep coming. And
all right.
It has a lot to do with questions.
All right.
Yeah, I think it's the difficulty comes when I think of someone who follows, especially someone who's been, you know, who lived on earth a while ago.
Right.
How then do you take the spirit of what they were about to this modern time?
Okay.
I guess that's been the challenge for Christians every time.
Okay. So how do I, let's see if I can rephrase it, how do I bring the spirit of what Jesus of Nazareth was all about into my current dilemma? Mm-hmm. Issues, challenges, context.
Mm-hmm.
All right. What else might following Jesus mean?
Well, first, this idea of who is Jesus. When it says follow me, who is me? And so it's part of the long, twisty path is figuring out who Jesus is.
All right.
And then it becomes, I think, how to follow becomes a little clearer, but when we're so confused about who Jesus is, it's harder.
Right. Marcus Borg, in his book, Jesus, A New Vision, talks about living with the question, taking seriously what Jesus took seriously. What does it mean to take seriously what Jesus took seriously? That's, I think, related to your sense of bringing the spirit of Jesus of Nazareth into these issues.
One of the problems with following is there are so many other things pulling me to go in other directions, so to stay focused on that.
Okay, so it has a dimension of staying focused rather than wandering off in all directions. Okay, let's take this whole, Jesus talking about the reign of God and how we participate in this. And he says, here's one of his instructions: deny yourself, take up your cross, And Luke adds the word daily, by the way. It's not in Matthew and Mark, but it's in Luke. And follow me. Now, put that into a real life situation for me. What might be an example of working that process for you? Put some flesh on those bones. Make it real.
Well, it's just not only accepting the trials and the tribulations in life, but also reaching out to other people.
Okay.
And my sister-in-law here works in a where they provide food for the homeless and that sort of thing. And I think that's following Jesus.
All right.
The Beatitudes, clothe the naked, feed the hungry.
Okay. What might it also mean inside you? What would be an example?
Spending time where Christ spent time in prayer or whatever.
Okay.
Or meditation, quiet.
Quieting ourselves down. Okay.
Talking to God.
All right. All right.
The hardest part of this for me is denying myself.
Okay.
For me, my hearing of that is about letting go of my own ego.
All right.
I find it real easy to work for justice, even if that puts me at risk, to take unpopular stands, to do stuff that Jesus did. But oh, aren't I good for doing so.
Okay.
So for me, the hardest part of this is denying myself.
Right.
To do it for Christ's sake, not my own.
All right. Yeah.
Well, he starts out by saying, if anyone wants to become my follower, so that's the catch for me too. Am I doing this as a follower of Jesus, or am I doing it because it makes me feel good?
Okay.
And so that's where the denial comes in. It's indulgent to do it for myself. It's denial to do it for Jesus if I'm not naturally inclined in that direction.
Well, when we talk about following Jesus, I think we need to define what he came for.
Okay.
And then that gives you a better idea of what we should all follow. And I think he came to teach us the right way of life.
Okay.
How to live our lives.
Mm-hmm.
And he gave us a lot of examples of how to do that.
See if we can get this into a more, you know, something that you're struggling with. What would it mean to deny yourself, take that up, whatever that is, and follow Jesus? What would be an example of that process in you?
Yeah. Well, get yourself out of the recliner before the television sets.
Okay.
Do something productive. Driving somebody to a doctor.
All right. All right.
I just had a thought that part of taking up one's cross is facing one's imperfections.
All right.
I think somewhere in my head I have that I need to somehow have it right before.
Right. Okay.
Be perfect or whatever.
Right. So that would be interesting, taking up your imperfections, including them, not eschewing them or distancing yourself from them. Right?
Part of the denial is looking good.
Right, because you want to look good. You don't want anybody to know you've got some blemishes, right?
There's leaving safety behind, too, I think.
Leaving safety behind?
The recliner, you know.
Okay.
The recliner is very safe. Right. And to go to a place where you're less safe and where you not only have to be unsafe, you might have to then deal with fear, it would be a lot harder.
So there's risk, insecurity sometimes in this, right? Right.
Become a missionary.
Become a missionary. What does it mean to be a missionary to yourself, do you think?
Take what you have, whatever it is, hope that it's good and try and get others to emulate you.
See, I think Jesus is really talking about a process that goes on in us as well as a process that goes on outside of us. Sometimes it's easier to see the injustices out there and be a part of them than it is to see the injustices in here and be a part of them, right?
Well, part of being a missionary to oneself, I think, is accepting ourselves as we are.
Accepting ourselves as we are, all right? Let me read you just, I have a book to recommend to you. It's in the bookstore. It's called Surrender. I get a kickback for everyone I sell here. It's written by a Roman Catholic, a woman, theologian, Mary Hines. And I read quite a bit of this stuff because I'm interested. And I find this little book very helpful. Many of us...
It's a fire
alarm. What was that?
Just a child. Oh.
Many of us spend our lives trying not to acknowledge that we lack ultimate control of our lives. Some of us try to control our lives by controlling other people. Some of us shut ourselves off from our feelings in order to try and control the possibility of being hurt. Some people try to control life through the attainment of wealth or knowledge or success. None of these attempts to be in control work. To surrender to the reality of our lives is not to invite tragedy or practice an attitude of defeatism. Surrender, in its healthy form, means seeing the truth. She says, surrender, denying oneself, means seeing the truth. Sometimes we may suffer. Other times we may celebrate. Practicing the spiritual principle of surrender means that although we set goals and try our best to achieve them, and we dream dreams and give our all to making them come true, if a goal fails or a dream is broken, we can begin again. After an appropriate period of time, we can stop clinging to our original expectations and learn to set new goals and dream new dreams. Living a surrendered life is not related to apathy or lethargy. It is a challenge to be ever open to new realities, new dreams, new lives, and new perceptions. Now, did that ring any bells with anybody? What came to you as you were listening to that little passage there?
Stop pretending.
In The Sound of Music.
Yes.
And the Mother Superior says to our hero that when a door closes, a window will open. And that you do. You parts of your life have horrible endings or good endings. They end, and a new chapter starts. That you embrace that and go on. That you don't wallow in what didn't happen. And the dreams. And it happens in our lives all the time. Little ways and big ways.
Okay.
All right. I really like that because it speaks to one thing we haven't even talked about here. There are women of a certain age, my age, who were brought up to think that surrender and denial were being feminine. And so when I in the past have heard these words, they didn't have a real negative connotation for me. And so part of what I need to do is hear them in a new way. Or experience them in a new way. So I like what you read there.
You mean because it meant giving up who you were,
a lot of who you are,
potentiality,
and
becoming a second class something or another. Right?
Yeah, kind of a non-person.
A non-person.
I mean, the handmaid.
The handmaid.
Hand-person.
That's interesting.
A great book by Carol Flinders. Have you... It's how she struggled with her feminism and spirituality and worked on both of those and really addresses those issues.
Jung talks about this process that many of us experience it as torture. The process of giving up our most dearly held illusions about ourselves. One of which may be that we're a second-class citizen. Because we become comfortable in that role. Or that we're old. Or whatever it is that defines us in some way that's not helpful.
Adversely, though, it could mean freedom.
Right, exactly. By giving up our most dearly held illusion.
But it might hurt to release it.
Oh, yeah. We're very wedded to those images, right? Right.
You're more comfortable with the familiar, even though it's hurting you.
I like the fact that Luke adds the word daily. What does that mean to you?
Not done once.
Not done once, okay. Alright.
You can try again every day. Right. You fail one day, you got the next day to do it.
Okay.
Your burden changes on a daily basis. You may you may come to terms with some of the issues that were a burden, and so therefore they're gone, but something else can arise because of that, even because of that.
Right.
It's something that all of a sudden you now want to address the issue with a person that originally caused that,
right.
That you were carrying. Yeah. Kind of thing.
So this being a part of the being a disciple, being a part of the reign of God, the community of God. There's a German theologian that, instead of using reign of God, talks about the community of God. I kind of like that phrase, actually. Because I never was comfortable with kingdom because of its masculine orientation. But I was telling Linda, I sometimes use when I preach queendom, but that people don't seem to resonate to that either. Kingdom. Well, that's a good phrase. Anyway, this or the abundant life, or this reality, is a process. It's a process that goes on and on, isn't it?
Where does Luke say daily? I'm sorry, I'm again lost.
Oh, Luke. The voice from the heaven.
Yeah.
Oh, it's back there. Oh, I thought it was up there. Luke 9:23. If anyone come after me, let them deny themselves, take up their cross daily and follow me. Is that not in your version of Luke? So it's this process that goes on and on. Yeah, sure.
I think the answer of all of us to this, deny yourself and take up your cross, is no. I'm too scared.
Okay.
And so he turns to Peter and says, Peter, you're going to deny me, not yourself. So the follow me means that Jesus had to die, and we with Jesus, in order to free us from the fear. He says, come, I will take your hand and lead you toward the loss of everything that you hang on to. And only when you experience that will you be free. And so I think deep down we say, no, it's cost too much. I'm scared. And that's why Jesus had to take us toward what we fear the most and through it.
It's interesting that the plethora of books right now on simple living that are in our bookstores. And Jeanette was reading one to me all the way from Scottsdale to Canada. I guess she thinks I need to know about that.
Did it work?
Well, I think I'm with you, you know, that no gets off of me. But anyway, the author was talking about that reality that you just spoke. Now, where we are on the economic strata, what does it mean to live intentionally and begin to divest oneself? Because we get possessed by not only our illusions about ourselves, but our possessions as well, don't we? So this denying oneself sounds like a really negative kind of process, but in reality it's really a life-affirming, living into a new way of living.
One thing about follow me, too, that occurs to me is that if we really follow Jesus, then we have to go into the desert, and we have to go into the Garden of Gethsemane, and we have to do that again and again and again. That it isn't we just follow me, the Christ, the resurrected Christ, or we follow Christ through all the struggles too. That's also part of the journey, and also part of following.
Scott Peck, in one of his first books, the first sentence is, life is difficult. And that affirms what we all believe, is how you deal with that life that affirms who you are. Some people never live their lives.
Then Jesus said to his disciples, people who follow a teacher, if anyone would want to be my followers, aren't we? Then the other thing that struck me is if anyone wants to become my followers, follow me, would be the logical direction. Now, if you want to follow me, follow me. But Jesus put some intermediary steps in here.
Right.
And deny themselves and take up their crowns.
Right.
So I think those become very key to preparation to follow.
Right. It's all part of the following, isn't it?
Well, or preparation for following.
And I heard you say, Jeff, want. Mm-hmm. Is that synonymous with desire to want to follow? I would think maybe my heart would have to change to desire or want to.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, we need to conclude by my watch here, but Goethe says, see if I can remember it, die and become, till thou hast learned this, thou art but a dull guest on this dark planet.
Say that again.
Die and become, till thou hast learned this, thou art but a dull guest on this dark planet. Emily Dickinson wrote, I did write her stuff down here, a death blow is a life blow to some who till they died did not alive become, who had they lived had died, but when they died, vitality began. Or George Albert Coe, the problem of releasing our powers is the problem of both mastering and submitting to the process of becoming a person, a submission that is also a mastering. Here is the paradox of rationality in a finite and growing being. A sort of dialectic is involved. Self-affirmation, followed by self-denial, and then realization that this denial of self is in reality a higher and fuller affirmation of selfhood. I'll pass these around or leave them up here and you can look at them if you like. And here's the statement by Jung that I was talking about. It is not surprising that many people who have adopted a certain pose toward themselves should feel a process of individuation. Sometimes I substitute the word spiritual development or formation as a torture. In accordance with the old mystical saying, give up what thou hast, then shalt thou receive. They are called upon to abandon their dearest illusions in order to let something deeper, fairer, and more embracing grow up within them. For it is only through the mystery of self-sacrifice that a person may find themselves anew. Or finally, from Bernard Milan, if history reveals anything, it is that disillusion and growth have been aspects of the same phenomenon. Growth has not occurred anywhere without involving disillusion. Every major cultural change throughout history has involved this twofold process of death and emergence. So, it seems to me this reality that Jesus talks about is embossed in the very substance of who we are and the way God works with us and within us. So I'd like to ask you to think about what is your cross that needs to be taken up right now in your life? And what would it mean to bring that to the question, how can I take seriously what Jesus takes seriously? And see what comes for you as you write in your journal today or this week. I'd encourage you all to find some paper and if you have a few moments to just sit out on your porch and look up at the mountains and do some writing. Well, thank you all. Tomorrow we're going to do the speck and the log.